You're listening to Frank Prattle. My name is Zephyr Thrull. You're listening to WPS1, PS1 Contemporary Arts Center, a MoMA affiliate at www.wps1.org. You're also listening, perhaps, to the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery's website, our gracious host at www.sfacgallery.org. And hell, you might even be listening to Marks and Zavatero's website as well. And there's the outside chance, one in a million, that you're listening to frankprattle.com. Today, extra, double, triple, quadruple special guests. We have James Goble, who is a quote-unquote painter from the Bay Area. Hi, James.
Hi.
And we have Steve Zavatero, who is one of the partners of Marks and Zavatero Gallery here in San Francisco. Hi.
Hello, Zephyr.
Maybe we just start out with a brief introduction of who you guys are and what it is that you do.
Bay Area painter, how about that? I'd like to just be described as a big, fat Bay Area painter.
Is that P-H-A-T?
Yes, okay. P-H-A-T. Yeah, that's my gig.
You're a big, fat Bay Area painter.
I like to keep it simple. Yeah.
All right, good. Steve, yourself?
Well, my wife, Heather Marks, and I started Heather Marks Gallery in 2001. And have had various levels of success since opening. And late in 2007, we decided it was time to change the name of the gallery and shake things up a little and put my name on the masthead, as it were. So in the beginning of February, right before we opened James Goble's show, we changed the name to Marks and Zavatero with an ampersand. And the website is markzav.com, markzav.com, because no one can spell my last name. We thought we'd keep it much more simple. So it's markzav.com. If you go there right now, you can see James's work right on the homepage. Click that image and be
there. You go.
Introduced, if you don't know him already, to the wonderful world of James's work. It's really awesome.
Which we'll get to right about now.
All right.
So now, just for the listening audience who hasn't had the pleasure to go to the gallery yet and see your show, or perhaps is listening without the internet, if there is such a thing these days. I'll just give a brief description of what your show looks like. You enter into the gallery, and there are large pieces. I would say, 3 feet by 2 feet around there?
Yeah, around there. Yeah. 2 5 by 7, I think, is the largest.
Yeah. It's,
is that?
Yeah, 72 by 65 by 6.
Okay, there you go.
And from seen well. Far away, from, when you're looking through the door into the gallery, it looks like a hyper-ornate, detailed acrylic painting is what I first thought of when when I first saw it from a distance, and thought, my God, that is detailed. That it's crisp and perfect and bold. And then upon closer inspection, walking into the gallery and pushing aside all the rude people that typically are in the gallery, and getting up close.
If you can get close to them, because there's so many people.
It's hard, elbows. But, I'm fairly tricky.
Okay.
You notice something peculiar about them, that they are not indeed made with acrylic paint, although maybe a little bit are, but they are in fact made out of felt and yarn.
You are indeed correct. They are paintings made out of felt, wool felt and acrylic felt, and yarn kind of serves as the line for the images, for the figurative paintings.
Right. So now if you were to kind of look back in, in the history of felt and yarn and things like that, maybe outside of boys, who had some work with felt there, that felt and yarn, it tends to be left in the craft.
Well, it's exactly, actually, Joseph Boys is exactly why I started using felt. I was, a number of years ago, making work on the subject of fat gay men, and I just did a little bit of art history research and kind of learned what other artists had also been using or making work about fat, and Joseph Boys used felt as a stand-in for fat, kind of like as sustenance and a life kind of giving thing, and if you kind of know the mythology that surrounds him. So my contemporary adaptation of it was just to go to the craft store and see what felt looked like today, and it was kind of the, those brightly colored bolts of fabric largely used for church art or something like that. And I just bought a whole bunch of it, and I didn't even know what to do with it, actually, when I bought it, but I just thought I would start putting it in my art somehow, and that's kind of how felt entered the work.
Okay. And now to, you know, kind of go beyond the materials that it's made of, it the scenes that you depict are quite particular as well. They are and you know, I'm obviously going to flail at this, so perhaps you'd best.
I do paintings of big fat gay men, basically. I mean,
bears
specifically. And the title of this most recent show is called Bear Hunting. So, and early on in the work, my original paintings were based on photography that was from the back of magazines like Bear Magazine or Bulk Mail. There were like singles ads. It was really the one place where like big fat guys could look sexy. And they were often the kind of images that were like, you know, you put your camera on auto and you kind of like run in front of it and, you know, pinch your nipple or wink to the camera and then you get a sexy picture of yourself.
I know it well.
Yeah, yeah. Story of my life. And so that served as the kind of the first iteration of the kind of images I was using. And then slowly I started moving them outside and putting these kind of these big guys kind of on vacation and using images based on like guys, you know, traveling on yachts in Hawaii and things like that. And in more recent years, I've been interested in fashion and dandies and the kind of the thinking about that, the large male figure kind of historically, and when was the last time it was okay to be kind of a big fat guy and wear lots of clothes, meant you were wealthy. And so that's kind of how I arrived at what I'm doing today. It's much more interested in kind of contemporary fashion and in a new variation on kind of dandyism.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, Steve, when you first saw these pieces, I mean, they're definitely, I would say, outside of what is typically going on in the art market. I think that you are officially, you know, James, that you've made a splash in at least my mind, you know, and I know many others as well. What attracted you to him, Steve?
Well, back in the summer of 2005, or before that, Heather and I were getting ready to think about the ideas for our next summer group show. And typically, Heather and I co-curate a thematic show that, you know, makes some commentary on the contemporary art world. And we came up with the idea of Naughty and ended up choosing four artists to show. And that was the first time we worked with James. But it was a show with three local artists, James, Keith Bodwe, Therina Rose, and then a fantastic New York artist named Ken Weaver, and just pulled that together into a thematic group show. But it was, you know, artists now working more with just these completely different kinds of media. I mean, you know, we obviously our gallery, we show artists that are doing all kinds of things. Mike Arcega working with Spam, Libby Black working with paper, James working with felt. It's, you know, part of what we do, but obviously the work it winks at a Baudelairean kind of past of you know, these guys kind of, you know, on the surface maybe big, you know, happy people, but on the in the inside there's a naughty side to his work that's titillating. That's what we found interesting to start with. But again, he showed more. We had the double portraits more, even the felt pieces you had, and the drawings were more of kind of the mirrored double portraits, which you were working on a few years ago. And then in the new show, it's more solitary figures searching, things like that.
Yeah, the work that they had in the group show, and I was really focusing on ruffled collars and rosy cheeks and extra long eyelashes and curly locks and things like that, and just working on portraiture as a way to, I don't know, just was thinking about the figure in a new way. And then I slowly kind of moved away from that and started working in images based in photography again, in real space, I guess.
And so when you say images based in photography, you've moved kind of from, you know, the back of magazines to perhaps, you know, are these people that you know?
They're all my friends. They're all people who...
Fellow bears?
Fellow bears.
I mean, that is to assume that you
yes,
would be
yeah, I guess I would identify. I guess I have, you know, that's why I'm marketing
I am bear.
Yeah, I am bear. Keep it simple, yeah. And so they're friends and friends of friends and... it usually takes a little bit of convincing to get people to model for me, but you know, usually
even
they do it happily.
They've seen your work already. It takes them still. I mean,
yeah.
I would jump at it.
Really?
Yeah.
Put on 50 pounds, buddy. You're there.
Can I use a suit? Nothing.
A fat suit? Yeah. Oh, maybe that could be a piece. We can just fatten you up.
It's interesting because a very common question we've been getting during James' social is, are these all self-portraits? And I have to convince people that they're not.
Right.
We're showing eight pieces, and it's like, if you really take a look, then they're clearly not. But it's, I don't know, it's just people's perception of it right away. First blush, I mean.
I get that a lot. I get that people always think that I'm painting myself. And I've included myself in one painting a number of years ago. But other than that, I'm much more comfortable directing people and getting images that way.
Right. Now, for the benefit of those not present, there is one solid theme that tends to visually run through these latest pieces, and that is a candle. Tell us about that and the possible narrative behind that.
Well, I'm always interested in my work with pairing these large, otherwise kind of menacing, I think, figures with something delicate, and I gave them all candles to kind of as a stand-in for like grace or civility or something like that. My work is repeatedly talked about in this kind of like blue collar, kind of these blue collar ways of, you know, guys wearing flannel shirts, and indeed they are. But I've surrounded them figuratively in the past in landscapes with mushrooms. And to me, the candle is the same idea. It's like the idea that that there is a little bit of grace to them, that they can't move fast, that they kind of are, you know, being in somewhat kind of controlled by that. And so I like that idea that they had to move slowly and be graceful and hopefully find each other before the candles go out. That's kind of the idea.
It definitely gives it, you know, my first impression, and second impression actually also was, one of my favorite games growing up was a game called Clue.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if either of you are aware of this game, but man, I love the hell out of that game, you know? Professor Plum, I believe it was, and Colonel Mustard with the rope in the study. I mean, that drove me crazy. Hours.
It's sexy, isn't it?
And the idea of this crazy elaborate mansion where there are these huge, you know, massive bearded men, you know, with somewhat, you know, provocative looks upon their faces with candles wandering through the dark, totally sent a shiver up my spine. Tell me a little bit about kind of that mansion feeling that you tend to have, that Baroque craziness.
Well, I wanted to put the figures in an environment that was anything other than kind of the standard just interior. I like the idea that they're all searching for each other in this mansion or this gigantic estate, like slowly, you know, hopefully, God willing, you know, finding each other and before the candles go out. That's kind of like the narrative that I had in my head, right, in terms of how they're looking. And some of them have given up, you know, they're seated. And then some of them, and the one thing I didn't...
Just taking a break.
Yeah, I just didn't want them to look jolly. I mean, that's the one thing I kind of always kind of don't do, I think, in my paintings is kind of give them a little bit more complexity, I think, by not kind of having them be that, you know, finger in their cheek kind of happy Santa thing.
Right.
There's a definite sense of longing, I think, in many of the pieces. The faces look very kind of distant and a longing, a desire that's being unfulfilled. And the candles are a great thing to talk about because if you walk through the show, I mean, the candles are all different lengths. Some guys mm-hmm. have just started, and some, their flames just, you know, literally and figuratively about to burn out. And I think that's really gives it that kind of sense of longing that I enjoy about this body of work.
Yeah, I like the one painting that I kind of think about the most, I think, is the John Deere painting, the guy in the John Deere shirt, because...
And the title of that one was again, I'm sorry?
What did I title that?
Was that From the Depths I Called?
From the Depths I Called You?
Yes,
does that
that's
sound
the
like
title.
It? Yeah,
nice.
There you
it's
go.
On the card, I should know that.
Yeah,
but
well, that's
next
not
time,
my job.
Next
yeah.
time.
Sorry. But what I like about that figure is that he's just so kind of defeated. And he's got three candles. Like, he should be the happiest guy in the show, you know, but I don't know. I kind of think that that's the funniest one to me, is that he's just kind of like this big blob kind of hanging out, you know, just kind of who has given up. And hopefully the other guys, I guess, will come to him, I guess.
I was rifling through my brain for the Adam Ant lyrics because that's a major influence on James's titles, which I think is really interesting. And that's not from an Adam Ant song, is it?
No, I think it's from a TV on the Radio song. I kind of I choose lyrics from either Adam Ant, TV on the Radio, or Lil' Kim. I think those are the three... The three.
Like,
yeah.
Do you have
yeah.
one called Big Mama Thing or what?
I have one called Hennessy on the Rocks.
There is an Oasis one, too. In this
there show. Is one Oasis I one.
Keep, that song's been in my head for 3 weeks.
I know.
I look at that piece. It's called Someday You Will Find Me.
Yeah. Yeah. That was just too good. But I figured, you know, why come up with titles that, you know, there's already great little sequences of words out there.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I listen to when I make the work. And so it seems, it's either that or like, you know, Dr. Laura quotes, probably. I listen to talk radio. Like, so I think I would do something a little bit, you know. So that's how they're titled too.
And so you are referring to these as paintings, though they wouldn't, you know, many people would not consider them straight up paintings because there's no.
Yeah, fuck them. I don't. They're paintings. Paintings are worth more money. No. I'm a painter, and I've always been a painter, and I think that's just the sensibility I have. And when I'm not doing those, and you know, Heather and Steve have seen in my studio that I do have like oil paintings going, and I work more traditionally just on the side in my own, as an addition to this practice. But I just entirely think of them as paintings because I don't know what else they would be really.
Okay. One of the things that particularly draws me to them is your use of color. It's like a technicolor madness skyscape that, you know, got fed through neon greens and fluorescent pinks, and I love it.
What, oh, thank you.
What are your choices for that? Is that you said the only colors felt comes in?
In fact, for a long time I was really hesitant to use any kind of color that wasn't really. Kind of naturalistic in a way. So I did a lot of airbrushing to make the color a little bit more naturalistic. And then as I got into thinking about making work about dandies, it just kind of like broke open this barrier where I kind of just decided I could do whatever I want. All of a sudden, like about 4 years ago, it just occurred to me that I could use like neon green felt, you know, and it not be grass or something in a painting. So that was kind of like, that's kind of another way that I've kept this kind of project alive is that I'm now thinking about the paintings much more in terms of color and thinking of those formal things as well, if that makes sense.
And the evidence of that, just one small example, but at the bottom of the piece called I Love You and I Always Will, the large piece, the carpet, the rug that you've done, it's just a portion of the rug with the guy sitting in the front. Right. That's really caught a lot of people's eye. I get a lot of comments on that, just your use of color there and patterning as well, and then the gold sort of wallpaper behind that. And let me just say, if you're listening to this show at any time, you can go to our website at marksav.com, click artists, and then click James Goble, and you can look at the pictures that we're talking about here in the show. But, you know, if you can get into that, just your sense of patterning, how you choose the, you know, are you cutting the felt? I mean, are they based on pictures? Is that something that you're sort of creating as you build up the backgrounds in your images?
I mean, and also to dovetail into that question is, you know, do you ever get bored with that kind of, I mean, that's incredibly labor intensive work you're doing there, like factory work, I would almost say. You know,
I love it. Yeah, it suits my temperament really, really well, because some days I don't want to work in the studio, and the idea of doing like a little like a repetitive task like cutting 100 of these little shapes that will go into this oriental carpet that I'm putting in a painting is really satisfying, because I don't have to kind of be there for it. I kind of just like go in there and I just am a machine, and then some days I'm much more invigorated, and so those are the days that I do the drawings on the canvas. And so it does, like, my practice is really big in a lot of ways, that it goes through a lot of different steps, and then at some point, like, I paint on them, and I do lots of stencil painting, and I do a lot of airbrushing on the work as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really nice that, because the paintings are more complex now, that I can, it kind of suits my mood. It actually, I've kind of grown to be really comfortable making my work, which I think in the past, I think that's one of the reasons I stopped making felt paintings about 4 years ago and just went straight to acrylic and oil on canvas.
And Steve, for yourself though, when you're showing these, how do you describe them to people when they walk in? What, you know, they walk in and they say, "Oh my God, that's gorgeous," and you say, you know, what?
Well,
blank. They're for sale.
Is, I mean, they, yeah. Here's the price list.
Besides that. You know, it's funny, most people who either even receive the card and may not look to the media, or they just look on the website and even clicking the thumbnails and they don't look at the media, they think they are paintings. Yes. But they come in the, I mean, they think they're made of, let's just say, straight acrylic or oil, you know, paint media. So people come in the gallery, and it's amazing time after time to watch them slowly realize that they're made of felt and yarn. And then it just opens up a whole new, you know, realm for a lot of viewers of the show, because they've just never seen felt worked with in this way. And that's what's really incredible about it. But, you know, typically I'll kind of go into the history of what James has been up to. We'd like to mention a lot the Las Vegas Museum Show, because that was a very important museum show curated by Dave Hickey that I'd love for James to talk about
the UNLV experience and Dave Hickey at some point.
But, you know, I mean, you know, he described the work as just a great work by a talented San Francisco artist who's, you know, been showing all over the place, New York, Vegas, getting great press. But, you know, I try to leave the interpretation of our work for the viewer. Typically, I don't find that people want to hear what I think about it, but I let them sort of, you know, decide what they think it's about. And then, you know, if there's a conversation to be open, we can go from there. But, you know, I mean, the pieces are gorgeous. They're beautiful. Again, for me, the sense of longing is very prevalent. And the search, I mean, everyone's searching for something.
What are you searching for, Steve?
Let's see. That's a whole other show. Anyway, but, you know, I'm not only like to talk about our gallery, but I like to also talk about and promote how much talent there is here in San Francisco, not only with artists, but great galleries and great spaces. And, you know, right now, through March 29th, you have an excellent, talented artist right there to view, and that's James. So, I mean, there's a lot that can be said about the show, but like I say, I prefer people come in and make their own interpretations. But if anything else, just the craft of it is just stunning.
One question, though. You and Heather Marks, who is your mm-hmm. partner as well, mm-hmm. have just kind of consolidated your gallery into a new formation. This is the redawning, the phoenix, if you will, of Marks and Zavatero. Yeah,
I appreciate that. It's a renaming, and we have not changed the gallery program at all.
Not what I hear. Word on the street is everything's new.
Everything's new, yeah. We changed the logo. We changed our look and feel a little bit of the website. You know, changed our banner outside, and, you know, repainted the door, and we're using a new color scheme and all that. But, I mean, basically, I've always been sort of behind the scenes, and Heather, this has been Heather's, you know, dream her entire life to have her gallery, and she's the one that got the master's in art history and things like that, and it was always her baby in a sense, and, you know, I was there to help her out, and as soon as I got on her feet, I was going to take off, but, you know, based on all the things I've done in my life, it just seemed like a perfect marriage, a perfect combination of all my talents to bring in sort of the, you know, the backup, the technology, the infrastructure, the gallery, while she concentrated on the things she was good at, which was everything else, the sales and the history.
What were you going to do when you were going to leave after she got going?
Well, my experience was in broadcasting, actually. I came out of school with a communications degree, and I worked in radio for a while. So,
well, I'll be damned.
That's the podcast once a month, yeah, so I can keep my fingers in it a little bit. But then I worked in high tech for a while. But, I mean, a lot of my experience has just been with smaller types of companies, small operations and things like that. And I learned to do everything. I mean, you just have to – and that's the great thing about having your own business. I mean, you there's a lot of ups and downs, but you own it all. You own all your successes. You own all your failures. But I never was uncomfortable with, you know, A, dealing with the high-end clients, or B, you know, scrubbing the floor, you know, setting up for an art fair. I mean, it's all very – it's a lot of work, but it's all very rewarding. But there was just became a point, there was several little things that were happening where Heather was just going, she was getting all the recognition for the work we've done, and finally one day she said, that's it, we got to put your name on the gallery, I'm tired of people treating you like the help or the assistant or the receptionist.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
I was like, okay, you know, I never really cared that much about it, but at this point, we have agreed now that we've changed it, that we like the name Marks and Zavatero. It sounds a little bit stronger. It sounds like two old German
exotic,
and Italian
think,
guy.
Too,
yeah, like
a backer.
It's definitely like Russian and Italian in there at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we like the X and Z together. I think that's kind of a cool little thing. And, you know, it's funny because even people who have been working with us for 6 years, I've heard them asking her, so you took on a partner? So, I mean, you know, it was one of those things that just... you know, it was time, and I'm glad we did it. I think it's it's been really nice to get the positive feedback from people who have worked with me and say, you know, hey, congratulations. And it's nice, you know, but it's just, you know, it means we have to work harder now. We have a, you know, a new name and a new, I wouldn't say a new direction, but just kind of a focus on continuing to promote our artists to get them into museums and into great collections and the things that we do. So,
well, to kind of bring back to a comment that you made earlier about, mm-hmm. you know, really working with things outside of the art field, you know, that being broadcasting, high tech, things like that. And this is a question for both you guys, but specifically to you, James, how important is it in your own work to draw in things outside of the art community to make work about? Like, what are you inspired with as far as, you know, subject material? Do you find yourself, you know, pouring over art form and, you know, kind of making notes about what everybody else is doing and then going home and, you know, making up a new mock-up of what was just hot at Deitch Projects or what, you know? Tell
this
us.
Is exactly what I do. I just go to the Deitch Projects website and average out all the colors and then go from there. I think that, you know, like, the one thing that I've learned that I've been exhibiting for about 10 years now, and I've learned a lot, that all of that stuff, you know, I'm not 22 and going to Columbia and kind of getting an MFA. I just got to do what I got to do, and I think that's a lesson I just learned kind of just being an art maker and exhibiting. And, you know, some years are really hot and you get tons of press and lots of sales, and then, I don't know, I mean, for me, I just kind of just try to be true to my practice and pay attention to what I'm really interested in. And I have a really open, I have a group of friends that are artists and non-artists, people that aren't interested in art, and I like to have conversations with them, and they love giving me ideas, and occasionally, you know, one or two will hammer itself out, and I think that's great. I like being open to that. I like kind of having that conversation. I mostly like artists and other artists' work because I just like the way they think, and I think I love my work, but I'm also, you know, just as excited, if not more excited, to go, you know, check out shows and see my friends' work.
You mentioned shows, art shows, rock shows, which?
Mostly visual art, I would say. I think that's my, yeah.
Yeah, James is very, very supportive that way. I mean, we've bumped into him in LA and just, you know, not even knowing he was going to be there in Vegas, and he travels up quite a bit, and he is, I mean, it's just a sidebar, but it's very true what he's saying right here. I mean, I know he does support by showing up and checking out shows, and he's in the scene as far as, you know, keeping up with what's going on in the contemporary art world. I mean, that's a great thing, because it's nice to have a contemporary artist who's concerned that way.
Yeah, the, you know, outside of the hermit, you know, we've moved on.
I always know who's going to, like, not be my friend when the artist will say, like, I don't look at work, or I don't like going to, you know, that's like,
well, I don't
that's
like
so
you.
Boring. Yeah, like, get out there. What, you think your work's that interesting? I don't know. Like, so that's something that's always been kind of interesting to me. I definitely like other people's work more than my own, probably. I'm kind of envious, and that's why I do it. You know, like,
tell me who some of your favorites are nowadays.
Well, name. I mean, I think.
Yes, pick favorites.
Do you want me to pick favorites?
Yes.
Oh God.
Steve, you too.
And who do I think?
Steve, you can't pick people at your gallery.
Well, I think someone who I've been always admired is Jim Shaw. He's always an interesting artist. He's somebody who was kind of a mentor to me early on when I was an undergrad, and he's somebody who over the past 10 years has really, like, created some of the most interesting and compelling
bizarre
work. Yeah. And I just love, I mean, if you ever, you know, get a chance to even just hear him talk, he's just, like, amazing. And I just like the way his brain works. I think that he's really interesting in that way. And I also, I actually really like Marnie Weber, his wife's work as well, too. I think that that's really exciting stuff as well. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Good. Steve?
Do you want local artists, or do you want...
It's really up to you, but just they can't be your own.
Okay. Well, you know, Heather and I, we both, we love Kehinde Wiley's work, and we were lucky enough to acquire an oil wash drawing last year when we were in Chicago, which is his work we already coveted and followed his career for a little while. Jennifer Dalton is another artist we just bought from a gallery in New York, Winkelmann Gallery. She's, I don't know if you guys were in Miami, but she does a lot of pop culture commentary things, and they had two pieces. It was a like a wristband you could buy. One was black and white, one was white and black, and one said, "I'd rather be rich than hot," and the other said, "I'd rather be hot than rich," and they left them out, and people were taking them, you know, and they were trying to see, you know, which would people rather be.
And?
I think the clear thing was people would rather be hot than rich. So
whoa.
I'd have to
and yourself?
Ask them. I have it in my briefcase, but yeah, I did the hot than rich, because I figured, you know, if you were hot, you know, you could always work
sleep
to make
your way
yourself
to the top,
rich,
whereas yeah.
if you're
it's
rich,
very
you're
true.
Not work as hard to make yourself hot. You just, you know, I don't know. It was just, in Miami, it's a place where you can't really make an objective decision.
Now, all right.
There's a lot of pressure there. Yeah, no. I think, in retrospect, I think it's an interesting question. But I always felt that, you know, being a rock and roll star would be probably the coolest thing ever. And in that case, your hotness would make you rich. So
true. Look at Mick Jagger. There you go. Now I'm going to ask you a question. One of my personal favorites. Would you rather be ugly or stupid? And you have to choose, ugly or stupid. James.
Ugly.
Ugly. Why?
I don't know. I just can't fathom. I just can't. I don't like stupid people. I think. I mean, why would anybody? I mean, I'd much rather be hideous.
Okay.
I could charm people into liking me at least. Then. But stupid. Everybody hates stupid, right?
Yeah. It's the reason I chose radio over television, because they said you got a face for radio. So I'd say ugly. Because your voice is, you know, your what you can, the things you know.
Steve's gorgeous, by the way. Yeah. You cannot tell.
So hot.
So hot for radio.
Well, I think that is a perfect note to wrap things up on. Thank you, gentlemen, so much.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Zephyr, very much.
You're listening to Frank Prattle. My name is Zephyr Thrall. You're listening to WPS1 Art Radio, PS1 Contemporary Art Center, a MoMA affiliate at www.wps1.org. You might also be listening to the San Francisco Arts Commission Gallery's website at sfacgallery.org, possibly also to Marks and Zavatero's website, which they're going to be podcasting the hell out of this all over the universe. And, you know, let's hope you found this on frankprattle.com. Today, my special guests are James Goebel, who is a painter of felt, and of the felty bears,
felt
I shall say.
Bears, yes.
And Steve Zavatero, the co-partner of Marks and Zavatero Gallery here in San Francisco. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.